Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. As I pull down this 16-year-old vintage stick here, it's kind of a wild night out in the neighborhood because it's only 12:15 and it's a Saturday, and I happen to live in a place where no one believes in the hoax. So as you can see, we're going to talk about something that I'm calling anthropomorphizing death, because there's a lot of it, and it's a very natural process. But as we try to look at the situation in 2020, I've discovered, you know, it may be even inadvertent, but there's a brilliance in the evil that's going on in 2020. Imagine that you find every sort of built-in traditional habit, whether it be instinct or cultural habit, of a particular population. And then you create a situation that will exploit it, feed it, and then you can insert whatever you want. That's what 2020 is about. It seems as if there are some people out there that think that they have the right to live forever. There are people that haven't taken care of their health one day in their life. They eat whatever they want. They're completely overweight. They're diabetic. They're hyperglycemic. They have bad heart problems, all because of self-imposed issues. Who are now suddenly wearing a worthless piece of cloth over their face, trying to walk around and say, okay, well, it was going to be really hard to eat right and exercise. Don't have anything to do with that effort stuff. Go see my episode on effort shaming. You'll love it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk around grocery stores and malls with this, again, faux thing on my face. And I am going to police the very thing that I've never done in my lifetime, which is take care of my health. See how beautifully that extends the psychosis and narcissistic laziness of these individuals, such that it's like, oh my God, you're going to get a Karen on one side, and you're going to get a Karen on the other side. Take it off, put it on. When everyone should shut the hell up, and if you're afraid to catch something and die, stay inside. Just stay inside. The deaths for 2020 will probably be about 20 to 30,000 less than 2019. Cause of death, well, all the other ones are flatlined, and this one is going through the roof. But a very interesting thing happened on my Facebook feed. I've kind of switched over to the Facebook account where you guys see me at the Deep Thoughts radio page so that I can be with you guys more. And I've forgotten that this dude from my kindergarten all the way to high school had friended me on that account. And he wasn't a really big poster, so I didn't really notice it. But his brother just passed away. Sad thing. Sad thing, his brother passed away. But then I read in the comments, in his post, he's posted a picture of his brother. God bless him. God bless his pain, you know. I don't want him to feel pain. I don't want his brother to be gone. I mean, he's younger than me by quite a few years. At least 5 or so. Somewhere in there. But he says, if you don't think the CG graphic of the virus is real, think again. Trying to let us all know that he thinks his brother died of this thing this year. All right. And, you know, of course, these feelings I'm having about this particular situation have been growing. I didn't reply at all to it. Gave him a little huggy face, you know, emoji. He's probably incorrect with the diagnosis, but here's the thing. I went to 7 different schools, as I always say. A lot of people have been to more, but 7 schools in 12 grades, that's pretty good. I remember him and his brother, at least by first grade, because I only lived in his area for about a year and a half's worth of grades. And then we moved out into the country, same town, different school. He and his brother were morbidly obese from the age of 5 and up. He is still morbidly obese. And when I say morbidly obese, we're talking about at least 100 pounds overweight. The picture he posted of his brother, these are short guys. He's at least 100 pounds overweight. They have always been. And I'm willing to bet they're damn near 150, 200 pounds overweight at times in their life. Last time I saw this guy, he was binge drinking during one of our reunions because he does live in the town that I come from. Still, he was absolutely hammered, accusing everyone in the room of being racist. In fact, he accused one of the most experienced teachers who lives in a very urban area who couldn't possibly be that way, otherwise he wouldn't be talented at what he does, of being racist to him at the bar. I actually told a story about this some 4 years ago, about me settling this sort of dispute, but he was the other guy, pulling his SJW card out long before it was trendy. His body and his life are an indicator of his laziness. His accusation in the room of racism was a lazy way to deal with his drinking problem. The guy was hammered. And now he is anthropomorphizing the current situation in 2020 as the reason why his morbidly obese family has sudden deaths. I got another friend of mine I love dearly here in town. He doesn't live specifically in my town. He was at least 200 pounds overweight. He ate such bad food that he blew out his liver. He started having catastrophic organ failure strictly because of eating horrible food. He doesn't do drugs. He doesn't drink. In fact, I don't think he ever has in his life. That's just one of his things. Very religious man. But we have burial rituals, don't we? When you play Civilization way back in the day, or even today, and you're young and you're not aware of burial rituals, and then you play a video game where you're bringing up a society inside of some simulation, and one of the technologies that you can research is burial rituals, you might be like, why the hell am I doing burial rituals? I mean, it sounds cool, but why? What is that? And that is that when man hits a certain precipice of spiritual awakeness or awakening, we start to believe in a God. When you start to believe in a paradigm outside of yourself and outside of your observable reality because you listen to your senses, you start to manifest a connection, and then the connection becomes this sort of impression of what you believe you are feeling from the other side. It is a bit like being in a dark room with your hands out and you're touching stuff. And as you touch things, you have visions of what they're made out of. Maybe this one feels like wood. This one feels like steel. This feels like some soft bits on somebody. Once that occurs, the stories start flying. Gods are created. Whether they exist or not, we create them. And then as we create the gods, we start to assume what the gods would desire of us. And then we get a religion of some sort, a method of living. The elders of a particular village will look at the needs of the village and incorporate into a religion, if it takes off, if it is revered by the people, all of the habits that they wish the people had. For instance, circumcision was to temper the spread of disease, because we didn't have the hygiene that we have today to make sure we stayed clean. Now we're so clean, as long as you live in a first world country, you probably actually don't technically need to do it. But just knowing the average hygiene of a man, I haven't talked to too many women that are like, yay, love that. When the Catholic Church cornered the fish market in Italy, they started making fish a required meal of the week so they could sell their products. Nothing to do with nutrition. Definitely nothing to do with God. I mean, Jesus fished, I guess. We are being set up to take all of our instinctual rituals with death and give this this computer-generated graphic, which is your only evidence that this thing exists. And that's, you can take that to the bank. Now, you might have someone dying of something. When hospitals are subsidized by the government to diagnose us with something, well, what do you think? What do you think? I'm not going to kill most people, but man, if they can kill you, you get 50 grand. It was really weird. The audio just stopped for some reason. But they're getting us to remove logic out of our lives because they have this thing going around. I think for some it's comforting. Because if you lose a loved one and you don't want to have lost a loved one, and you look up at God and you're like, hey, why did you take my loved one from me? By the way, the sprinklers are going next door. Now they can just look at this thing. And then they get to go out and cash in on all of the sympathy from this thing. It's just a weird thing. You know, before social media, before the internet, when something horrific happened, like, well, there's different types of deaths, of course. There's ones you saw coming, ones that you didn't see coming. There's the young dying and then the old dying. It's two different hemispheres. What's really different about this particular year is the following. And you need to keep your spidey senses open on this one and apply this to lots of categories of existence in this world. Some are going to be blatantly obvious we're going to talk about, and then we'll swing back to the subject. But I want you to see like the undertow of what's going on. Anytime you create a crisis that lasts this long, you create psychoses inside people. Meaning, habits that didn't exist before, or existed perhaps in a very minute way, start to galvanize, start to solidify, start to become something that is difficult to extract out of your system. Remember what I told you a million times? My grandmother went through the Depression, and I don't think she was ever able to fix a meal, hundreds of meals, right? Without mentioning the Depression. That's how scarred she was. When I moved to California, I was buying some socks at this gentleman's store in Westlake, California. And this really dapper old dude walks up to me and he goes, because I'm looking at socks and I'm trying to find all these really cool socks. And he goes, hey, can I give you a piece of advice? I said, yeah, sure. And he goes, we learned something during the Depression. Don't buy different socks. I'm like, okay, why? And he goes, because when one of them gets a hole in it, your other one matches with all the other socks that you have. As soon as you get a hole in a designer sock, you got to throw the whole thing away. He was right. I did what he said. It was great. But we don't want to lose track of reality any more than we already have. I don't know how many dozen people have come into the smoke shops, posted online, that they have had a friend die, a relative die, and they pointed at this thing. And then you ask them a few questions about the person, and you do find out they have pre-existing conditions. You do find out they're over 80 years old, or they're really obese. That's why we don't want to get unhealthy while we're young, and why we want to be as healthy as we can until we get old. So at least we deal with the least amount of interruptions when we get older. But guess what? When you get older, your body stops functioning, your brain stops functioning, depending on how you use it. Remember, you keep listening to deep thoughts, you're probably okay the whole time. But we don't want to set into motion things that we're going to have to deal with for decades that are going to interrupt your ability to be compatible with other human beings. And it's not just your lovers and that kind of stuff. It could be your children. It could be your existing spouse, your existing relatives. It could be that 2 years from now, you're trying to do a business deal and someone is hanging on to the past, hanging on to these false paradigms, and you're having a hard time communicating because you didn't believe in it and they did. But the people who did this have two opinions of it, I guarantee you. First and foremost, the number one opinion that they have, they don't care. Two, they love it. They love that we'll be messed up. They'll be able to create small businesses and large businesses to deal with the fallout of the PTSD of this year of 2020. Oh boy, they're licking their chops, man. We have an entire year of false fraudulent diagnoses based on a test that, according to the creator, 94% false positives. He said if you, because they have to spin your blood to find out what you have, and there's a certain number of spins to find a certain particular condition. So he says if you continue spinning that blood, you'll go positive for absolutely everything that exists on planet Earth. Everything the machine can test for, you'll go positive for, including boogeymen like HIV. But because of this bad year, this fraudulent year, the medical data, as I've mentioned once before, is going to get skewed. We're going to be associating things with each other for years, and unless someone's got the guts to say, okay, everything that we deduced in 2020, burn it. Burn it and get rid of it. Because maybe some of it's true, but a lot of it's not. We can't afford to pollute our medical associations and facilities with all this bad information. Because we're then going to kill each other with false diagnoses, giving people medicine they don't need, not giving them what they do need. But this episode is really getting at the sort of root of a saying that might go like this. This is something that two friends will say to each other. Definitely guys say it. I don't know if girls say it. But guys will say, you know, I just did what I had to do to get through it. And that's part of what anthropomorphizing death is all about. It's a mind game. It's a mind trick. Just to get rid of something that would be otherwise impossible to deal with. And I respect that. I totally respect that. What I'm hoping is the individual that goes through this is able to then flush the toilet once this ceases to be so painful that that other false mechanism is necessary. But I want you guys aware of the fallout of this situation in not only yourself, which I doubt that a lot of you, unless you're new listeners, will have too much left over in the PTSD realm, but put some thought process into it to detox others out of it. Imagine this. The 1918 flu, H1N1, influenza, totally different thing than what we have now. It went on for almost 3 years. You know, little threads here and there, still going around the world. Now, you know, as well as I do, let's just say it ended in 1921, 3 years later. By the end of 21, we're pretty sure we got that mutation taken care of. But now someone dies in 22, kind of sporadically. The doctors at the time, with limited medical capabilities, might say, maybe it is a little straggler of that 1918 thing we had, whether it's true or not. And then as that family member who has dealt with potentially 3 years of bad news has to deal with that death, maybe it was easier to deal with it by lumping it into the other 100 million people that passed. Or maybe not. Maybe it was even more frustrating. God damn it, you know, get out of my life, get out of here, right? I think there's going to be, obviously this isn't a hugely profound observation, but I think there's going to be this difficulty of getting this boogeyman out of people's minds, unless there's a full admission exploration of what actually occurred. Again, one of the scenarios would be to say that there's a bioweapon going around that's being manually spread by infiltrators from this other country. It could be a lot of countries. Doesn't have to be a specific one you might think in your mind. But just spread it in public places and rural places. And someone goes home and dies of the bioweapon or really struggles through the process. And then, of course, it matches 100% what you're told this CG image is. And so you confirm it in your brain that it's real. Now, it's probably not a bad idea to confirm that someone is doing something. But now what if, and this is just completely hypothetical, okay, I haven't read anything that says this, I'm just giving you an alternative in your brain, just so you can keep, again, your your cognitive abilities as sharp as possible when looking at data. But imagine our military, our intelligence side of things has trapped a few text messages, voicemails, conferences, Zoom calls, whatever, and there's blatant evidence and admission that it is a bioweapon being spread around and not just some CG thing that no one can see in a microscope. I've had some interesting debates online, very briefly. I always walk away from them after a while because talking to dumb ain't worth your time, right? But what's interesting for me is that, and I'm just going to be blatantly honest about it, I have lots of friends who went from a previous career into nursing. Now, I've got some family and some sort of friend family where it's a different situation than the one I'm mentioning. But your low-level nurse, if you got all the nurses in America, I don't know about your country, but if you got all the nurses in America together and said, raise your hand if your previous job was being a waitress. I'm thinking more than 50% of them raise their hand. Yet these individuals with no empirical knowledge about virology, they don't have the vocational capability of teaching themselves this stuff by themselves. Now, some are deadly and some are amazing, but they're the ones out there championing our view of the situation. But to sit and try to be lectured by someone who, the second they start speaking, it's all talking points out of some mass product. But they want you afraid. They want you afraid. You talk to them about their hospitals and they'll say things like, we're at capacity. And I said, okay, so every employee that was working for your hospital in 2019 is currently going to work in 2020. Oh no, we're down to 15% skeleton staff, but we're overwhelmed. It's like, yeah, you would be overwhelmed any time of the year because guess what? The rest of the world's still working. People still getting fingers cut off and getting colds and pneumonia and a bunch of other stuff. It has nothing to do with this rumored computer virus. Isn't it funny if we say that the molecule is a CG image and then therefore it's a computer image and then we kind of are afraid of a computer virus in one symbolic way? This is why I don't have a lot of respect for a lot of the medical professionals that are coming out trying to make this a situation for everybody. The other interesting thing is that because I smoke cigars and sit in lounges, I will meet medical doctors who seem to have bags of hammers inside their heads. I mean, it is unbelievable what they believe in the world as a whole, and it's unbelievable how they've been able to operate in a medical profession, curing anyone, helping anyone, and they don't have the first clue what's going on in the world in any vector away from their job, which might sound great. Might sound like, well, yeah, I want my doctor to be 100% doctor, and not, you know, worried about poli-sci. The problem is that the medical profession is no longer one of those professions that is sequestered, and you're not like a farm doctor back in the 1800s where you just learn the wisdom from med school, but then you talk to other doctors and they're like, yeah, that's BS. Do this instead. Oh, yeah, okay, great. A little castor oil there, a little geritol there. Nope, they're being fed crap constantly, aren't they? They're now trying to inject everybody with something. Once a year is what they really want to do. Genetic modification, slowly but surely. And it's all about slow eugenics. 100%. And there's literal eugenics, which is your body will expire much quicker if you happen to get this stuff in your system. And then there's mental eugenics, which is your body's fine, but your brain's going to atrophy horribly. And therefore, you might take your own life. You might become so utterly useless that, your organs are the second thing to fail because your brain's not working right, not talking to all your pumps and your vacillating arteries and what have you. We have to be careful. We have to be extremely careful in this time. Just imagine that you were raised in a place where you believe, let's say accurately, that you were getting at least decent information because you were getting it from loved ones as you grew up and dealt with people outside your family circle. They're still good people, little town maybe or something like that. But up until whenever you venture out into the world, which you don't have to do, by the way, you had some pretty good rock-solid information, good bedrock, lots of rocks. And as soon as you go out into the quote-unquote real world and you go into big cities and what have you, you're immediately told usually some advice, like, hey, you're in a big city now, so there's a lot of scammers. When a woman asks you if you want to have a good time, it ain't because she likes your eyes. When someone says they have a great business venture just waiting for your money, it's a sure thing, a dead cert, as they say. They're lying. And then you realize that the fabric of a lot of things that you're interacting with, the corporations, the department stores, the marketing departments, are all lying to you, potentially. They have histories of lying to you. I'm watching this guy on YouTube, and maybe I'll put his channel up on there. He's a guy that deals, I think he's in New York City, somewhere in that region, and he does repairs on Apple equipment. Apple has presented itself since the amazing leader passed away. It is now not really a computer company, not really a cell phone company or a software company. It is the personal sort of Mardi Gras float for Tim Cook's personal psychoses. The corporation and its profits and priorities are all secondary to his personal message back to his mommy that he's a great guy. It's very typical of people like him to do this. Well, because the priorities have been shifted to, hey, look over here, they're now starting to kind of do some horrible things to their customers. One, you should know their software is, at least on the phone, is way behind the competition. And I mean like drastically behind. So sad. Doesn't have to be that way. They now are coming out with a set of machines with this M1 chip that apparently will not boot unless your machine has access to the internet. You're not even going to be able to launch an application if they decide you shouldn't launch the application. Because every time you launch an application, a non-encrypted hash sneaks out the network port to Apple, and if it doesn't get an answer back, they won't let you launch an application. Isn't that amazing? They are lying in the genius bars and telling you that repairs that would sometimes be free are going to cost you $1,200. This guy demonstrates it. Big surprise there. But they have signed the deal with the deep state, for sure, 100%. And they are trying to do, what, people tracking because of this year? Absolutely invading your privacy on a level that's ridiculous. They want to get you to think that you don't actually own anything that you buy from Apple. They want you to believe that you are renting it from Apple. That's pretty much what their warranties say. And now they have almost completely destroyed the ability for third-party companies to do repairs on their machines. And then they load up their genius bars with a bunch of liars and disgusting scumbags that deserve to be in jail to lie to you about the repairs on your computer. And I reported this in way before I ever noticed this year. I told you, I think in an episode a long time ago, you know, I used to walk into the store, and when I get any lip, I'd pull out my business cards of the people that I know at Apple to get them to be cool. And they didn't even believe me at first until they make a call to corporate or something, and then it was like, okay, when that guy comes in, don't mess around. Get him his stuff. But I had a guy tell me once that my computer was 2 years old and that's all I should expect it to last, and I need to get a brand new computer. He thinks I'm an idiot, of course, which is so beautiful. When you come in looking like me and they're like, oh God, we're going to rack this guy. Death. It's the ultimate experience for an individual by themselves in this reality, isn't it? Birth is the most beautiful experience you can have with another person. When you're with your wife or your husband and someone's coming into this world, I don't think there's anything more amazing than that moment. And I think there's a catch-22 with death. I think death is birth, and I think death is one of the most beautiful things that can happen to us. But the simulation has a purpose, therefore, we are to be terrified of death so that we behave, so we try to live in this world as long as we can, and potentially keep the bistro engine going. We're living out some Earth program, trying to find the question to the answer of life, the universe, and everything. I was watching an interview with Richard Harris on the Dick Cavett Show. This is the interview where Richard Harris comes in with a big giant scar over his left eye. His bridge of his nose is busted. He'd been in a bar fight the night before over a lady, he said. But he said he lost the fight. But he, I think, was the one that admitted, he goes, you know, I'm really terrified of death. And Dick Cavett's like, what about death freaks you out? And he said, just the idea of not existing is something I don't like thinking about. But death is also one of those things that we really can't conceive of, right? I mean, you can conceive of being sick. You might be able to, if you've ushered someone else out of this world, when you have the death rattle, being in that situation and struggling to breathe, and then eventually something happens. Again, we've had, Sam Kinison did not wear his seatbelt when he was driving from LA or Las Vegas to LA with his new wife. Get hit by a 17-year-old kid head on. And he crushed his chest against the steering wheel. He gets out of the car. He sits down in a ditch. And he said he was okay. He got himself out and sat down. And they said that he was starting to have a conversation with someone. And he said he didn't want to die. And then he said, why do I have to die? And someone answered the question on the other side. And he said, oh, okay. And then he died. Steve Jobs, who spent most of his life being very secular, eventually on his deathbed was to say something like, oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow. What do you think would have to happen to make that guy say, oh, wow? It's not that ridiculous story they tell you about the chemical drop in your brain that makes you see light, and then somehow you're constructing this tunnel, and everyone has the tunnel. Not everybody has the tunnel, folks. But that wouldn't blow Steve away. He would be probably thinking about, oh, yeah, this is when that chemical drops, and okay, here I go. This sucks. But no, he didn't have that experience. He had a beautiful experience. There's a moment when I think that we cease to do this step, this cartoon version of death in our minds, where we blame things that may or may not have contributed to our deaths. Not that that ever really makes us feel tremendously better, but if you think of it as the person, if you can basically indemnify the person who's dying from being responsible for their own death, it does feel better, doesn't it? When it's an accident, it feels better than when it was intentional. When it was not the result of negligence. I had one of my girlfriend's uncles die. And the scenario was that he had some friends over to our little town. And they ate dinner and had a really good time. And then they left to go 100 miles back home. So a 2-hour drive back home, roughly. And he realized that somehow they left some keys behind. Now, I don't understand how they got in their car and turned it on, but for whatever reason, I think that's what the item was, and he thought, oh my gosh, they're going to get all the way out the other side and not be able to get in their house. Could have been something else, but I think that's what I was told. He hopped on in his shorts and a t-shirt, and it was at night, and he's hauling butt. Well, he doesn't have much distance to travel in his brain because he's thinking, I'm going to speed. They don't speed, so I'll catch him within 10 miles or so. Now, nobody knows exactly what took place. They found him at this famous intersection where the little country road turns into a highway, and apparently his body was somewhere in there, and they think that he was going too quick. And we don't know if he had a blood alcohol problem. It's not a real big drinky family, to be honest. But there's some dirt and gravel and stuff right at that intersection. But so when he passed, there was sort of this romantic feeling we had that he was such a good guy that he felt it was important that his friends don't get home and not be able to access their home. He was a great guy. Everyone loved this man. And he died with his dignity. One of my best friends in school, high school. Brilliant dude, man. I've mentioned him a couple times in the past. He just walked into like a calculus class and just ace it. And 10 minutes later, he's left the room because nothing for him to do. He got so bored with life because he was so brilliant. He was like a scrapper. He was not like a nerd in any way, shape, or form. And apparently, the story is that he, I know he got into theft, stealing in order to get the high, like a kleptomaniac does, right? But he ended up selling drugs. And then he was murdered. And pretty much everybody thinks he got murdered by one of the drug dealers. Don't know. I mean, usually in the Midwest, there's a reason why you get murdered. I mean, and people would know. Like, if you walked out of a club and you were a jerk to everybody inside and you called everybody names, we've had people get baseball batted in parking lots and then they're gone. But then we're like, well, that guy was drunk. He was lipping off to those guys. Everybody wasn't, you know, cognizant of what they were doing. They all got stupid and he lost the game. When my buddy died, it was kind of like there wasn't the normal mourning that you would have. And we definitely mourned this guy being passed. And the weird thing about it was that when I separated from my hometown, I didn't maintain contact with him because we didn't have social media. It wasn't easy. And I wasn't about to write him a letter. Hey, buddy, how you doing? He moved around, I moved around, we wouldn't be able to find each other. So I find out years later that this guy's gone, and I realize I just had digitized a VHS tape of he and I recording some pretty funny stuff for a television channel we had in my hometown, running around the basement. So I cleaned it all up and sent it to his brother. Just wild, man. For me, my guilty anthropomorphizing this is that I see the whole thing, and this is just, I'm not saying I'm right or anything like that, but in my brain, as you might guess, I see this as a loop of existence. You're human temporarily, then you probably take a break as your light source, and then you probably participate in some way, shape, or form your return. Maybe you do the Shirley MacLaine thing where you choose every moment. You choose the difficulty of the video game and then jump in. Or maybe you just let it be random. And you're more concerned about the history that you're jumping into. I've always said, you know, I got really lucky up to a point, being born where I was born. Hopefully, in the next 2 months here, we see something absolutely revolutionary in world history, and it will be one of the most epic times in life to be alive. It might get really dirty. It might get mean. But you know, we read about things like revolutions that made countries possible, that made tyranny go away and freedom arrive. And so sometimes that's the case. I vacillated with the notion of like, how much do you take life seriously? Because that's a question, isn't it? You don't have to, I guess. You don't have to take it seriously. You can kind of do whatever you want. Some people don't, and we know those people, and sometimes they're really happy. Now, sometimes they get very unhealthy because they take that to an absolute extreme. We see people abuse themselves, don't we? I can't remember that guy's name on Howard Stern, who's the writer. I don't think his name was Howie or something, but he's the guy that did so much cocaine, his nose started to disintegrate, and it went out a couple years ago. And you're looking at his picture going, man, how do you, and you've seen all kinds of people who have abused meth and stuff. Thank God, a lot of meth damage, other than losing your teeth, but lesions on your skin and the sort of sunken face will repair itself to the point you won't even know that that was ever a particular person's past. But I've, you know, it's interesting. Like I've met so many people through film work and video games and just meeting brilliant people and working with them. And there was a scenario where, and just on the subject of taking life seriously or not taking life seriously, a buddy of mine, I'll just keep everything double blinded here, a buddy of mine had a best friend. This guy is slightly older than me. And his best buddies from a really affluent family, not from America, from one of those European countries. And his father was a prestigious dean at one of the most prestigious colleges in the world outside of the United States. So really academically blessed, probably on a genetic level, academically blessed that he could get into these schools probably for a very affordable amount of money. But his father blessed him so much with this lifestyle that the guy just didn't have to work. I mean, he kind of was like a little, he was in the hippie era, so he really lived the hippie era to the nines, man, and very creatively so. Extremely smart guy, extremely brilliant guy. Usually was on the precipice of emerging technologies. He has a couple quirky talents. And when I saw pictures of him when he was young, just a very handsome guy. And then I had actually, I believe I chatted with him through Skype a couple times because we were working on a project and they were like, hey, you got to work with this guy to get this thing done. It was definitely a privilege to do so. And I started to realize that this gentleman had about two teeth in his mouth when he talked. You know, it's real interesting when you have like a real prominent giant tooth and then there's nothing else there. And it started to just baffle me. And I actually asked my buddy, I said, you know, what's the deal with the teeth, man? And he was like, yeah, he goes, when we were young, dental care was non-existent. I said, yeah, well, you got to do a lot more than just not brush your teeth, man. He's like, yeah, everything was bad. And that we were hoping that this gentleman was going to get his teeth the last couple pulled out and get some new dentures in there or something to give him kind of his face back, you know. I remember that session sticking with me for years because I was thinking, gosh, man, why is it that people who should never make any money because they never have any good things to do with it always get it all, and the folks that have the greatest ideas and dedication to actually forge something into reality can never get any cash at all. I've been obsessed with, I'm kind of out of it now, but I've been obsessed this year with watching these car crash compilation videos, like I mentioned a couple times before. There's nothing more interesting than seeing a couple things. People with really expensive cars drive like absolute morons. And you're like, how did you earn the money to buy this car, but you don't know that you shouldn't turn left across three lanes? Really strange. And funny thing, I was watching probably about 3 months into this little habit, and I was pushing play on this video, and the second car crash was a crash one block from where I'm sitting right now. It's on my street. I actually passed the accident a week before it turned up on the internet. Really funny. I didn't know how the accident occurred, and I got to watch it happen. It was like, oh my God, just read the street, cross streets, and it was like, that's right where I live. Oh my God, crazy. But the other one is this sort of ridiculous carefree nature of driving badly. You see it all the time with young kids on motorcycles. You know, you're sort of faux banger who's in a car and filming the speedometer. Just saw one the other day where a guy drove a Tesla 135 miles an hour in residential. He found out the hard way that residential streets aren't paved for those kind of speeds, and he crossed an intersection. Nobody got hurt. Nobody else was there, but he realized that the intersection was a ramp, basically, at 135 miles an hour. Can't really see what happens, but you definitely hear a lot of screeching and bad stuff. It was a Tesla, okay? Probably dad's Tesla is the only thing I can imagine. But I think that as we see things in the world where people are risking their lives, we sort of cartoon their existence in their mind, like we vicariously cartoon it in their brain. we go, this person can't possibly be taking life serious. And we know there's this weird threshold. Again, the military is isolated down to the year of being 23 years old is the last possible year that a male, typically with any intelligence, thinks that there's no value to life, or the counter belief, which is I am invincible. Can't imagine dying. So I'll do anything. And, you know, there's pluses and minuses with that old thing. If you've never done anything interesting, you know, jump off a cliff into some water, jump out of a plane with a parachute on, and all these things that you might be afraid of otherwise, when you become too sentient to the idea of dying, you don't want to be stuck in some box somewhere. So some people make a career out of risking life constantly. And there's a certain amount of respect I have for those individuals. One, because I don't think they truly die. I just think their body goes away. I do think if you have children who are young or still going to need a lot of mom or dad's advice, that risking your life is sort of irresponsible. Because again, once you conceive a child and you plan on being a part of their life, your game's over. It's all about their game. Now, it will come back to you because eventually they're going to be pretty autonomous. Even though, let's just say, your kid during their 20s is very introverted, trying to get their game on, trying to get their salary up, trying to get a good job or whatever, amass things that you have, by the time they hit their 30s, they're willing to sit down and go, tell me about grandma, you know, or your grandma, or where are we Native American? Are we German? What are we, you know? And you'll get to answer those questions. And they'll be interested in hearing the answers as they become more mature, hopefully. Those sessions will be amazing. I think that the one moment when death really meets the pavement in terms of tread in our minds is when you have someone who dies that doesn't want to die. They don't necessarily think they're going to a bad place by any means, but they're too young and they had a premeditated situation where the illness got on them and took a year or two. And they're waking up every day going, I just don't want to die. I just don't want to die. I just don't want to die. That's not the thought to have, by the way. The thought to have is, I'm so glad I'm healthy. And you eat right and you cut down on whatever's causing your illness to happen. Get whatever treatment that works for you. But once you experience that personally, and you're not the one who's passing, and you take them all the way to the end, then you have a different outlook on life, don't you? You see this whole thing. Now, I think 2020 is probably having profoundly different effects on individuals in this particular realm. We have young people committing suicide. We have older people committing suicide. Suicide is obviously usually some situation where you feel like there's no hope. Whatever is today, you believe, mistakenly, that it's going to persist and not change. When you get older like me, and I've got plenty of friends I smoke with that have these same exact feelings, there is a point where you've lived so much of your life, you're like, geez, what can I do now? And the more that you succeed as a young person, and then you get older, you sometimes can lose faith that you can do equally amazing things in the present because you're thinking, oh man, I only was able to do those particular things because I was young and had a lot of energy. Not realizing there's a bunch of new stuff that only you can do because you're older, you're more subdued, your wisdom levels are through the roof. And what you can go do, the young person can't. And maybe it's more subtle. Maybe you're going to write a nice book. Maybe you're going to advise someone. Maybe you're going to conceive of a business that doesn't really take a lot of sweat, but it's going to be very profitable. Maybe it's just you've got an income, it's steady, and you're going to spend most of your time meeting your family, your friends. Maybe, like, one of the funniest things when you live next to a beach, and I'm sure several of you do, if you don't live next to a beach, just pick something in your neighborhood that is typically the reason why tourism happens in your area. When you live next to the beach, you rarely go to the beach. I mean, you drive by it all the time. It's always a beautiful sight. But getting there, parking your car, paying $10-$14 to park, you know, 3.5 miles from your house, it's frustrating. So we don't go a lot. But when we do, we're so happy that we did. The sound of the waves, you know, that's God's voice talking to you. That's literally what his voice sounds like. He's got many voices, but that's one of them, man. Just that white noise is there to give you your peace. It overwhelms your thought process because it is all sounds at all times. And it says, rest. Rest your mind. Let go of all the stuff you were hanging on to before you got here and let me give you the universe. And you get a tan while you're doing it most of the time. So there are all these things around us that because they become patterns, they get canceled in our minds. And when it gets canceled, then you don't see it anymore. This episode is hopefully going to, even though it's meandering in topic, give you some scaffolding, some support mechanisms whereby you can realize someone else is having the thoughts that you might be having, but also see things from a non-trivial perspective so that you don't lose sight, let's just say, of the toolbox that you have built your entire life that has the tools to solve these problems. I think 2021 is going to be a good year. I think it's going to be a wild year. Hopefully it's not a tremendously violent year, but it could be. Quite frankly, it could be. We have the president of Canada has invited China to put all of its troops in Canada. And that's a real suspect little thing to do. Not that it's going to be a problem. Could be weird. But let's just say it turns out okay. Well, here's what we want to have happen. As this stuff boils off, as the world refuses to take bogus science and be constrained by it, we want to come out of that gate like the best Kentucky Derby horse that has ever been bred, that's ever been taught how to race. And while all the other horses are fat and atrophied, both mentally and physically and spiritually, we're blasting. And it's just like being a Sooner in the United States when the individuals who, we were forming Oklahoma, and a bunch of people were told, okay, you're going to get on the southern Kansas border with all your stakes and your ropes and your horses and what have you, and tomorrow morning at a certain time, everyone can cross the border and whatever land you can grab is yours. And of course, a bunch of jerk-offs went across the night before and grabbed a bunch of land. It's always weird when that happens because you're thinking, is Oklahoma made of a bunch of Sooners? The answer is usually no, but there are some families that are definitely Sooner genetics, right? But we want to be whenever you can, because you might be in a region of the world where you can move today. Australia. Again, I just saw a video of Australia. It's so strange. I reported in one episode that it was announced that there were parts of Australia that were under martial law to keep everybody inside. And then I just saw a video from Daily Dose of Internet where they've opened up giant regions and everyone's walking around completely without that thing on their face. Not a single person. In fact, in the video, I saw a couple people cough and I just thought it was funny. We're dealing with the situation this year on many levels, right? Almost every conceivable level of your existence is being assaulted. It's being insulted as well as assaulted. And so a lot of you are being steadfast about it. Our moderator, Dave, has been an absolute knight in shining armor in this realm. And so when this ends, we want to literally go back to our lives. It's really tantamount to a soldier who joins the military during a crisis where you have a war going on. And then they run off for potentially 4 or 5 years. I mean, Vietnam, you could have run away for 15 years, depending on how many tours you did. And then you've lived this completely different existence. And I mean, nothing that you grew up with is around you. The hardships are exhaustively huge. And then you, all of a sudden, get this radio call, it's over. And you almost can't process that it's over because it's been constant, it's been tumultuous, and you just never envisioned it being done. Because you couldn't tell yourself in the morning as a soldier, this is going to end today. You couldn't, because then you wouldn't fight as strong. And you wouldn't have the faculties to last another day on the field, right? But can you imagine? This has happened many, many times in history where individuals are on some battlefield. They don't think it's ever going to end. And then it does. And then within a month, they're home with their families eating a huge dinner. A giant spread of turkey and mashed potatoes and everything, whatever you like to eat. And you're sitting there with people at the table that didn't go to war. And you're looking around and you're super happy to be there. Maybe you got a little PTSD, you don't know yet. But you're eating this food going, oh my God, I just switched realities. I went from war to peace. Well, we're going to have a small part of that next year or whenever we get this thing sorted out. And we're probably going to have some areas of the world they're going to sort it out peacefully, and we're going to have some areas of the world they're going to have to fight for their constitution. Man, you imagine me being a reporter in the battlefields because I had this show. I went down today to Huntington Beach, and there was a big rally going on that was very positive. But there was a couple people trying to agitate. They happened to be breaking the law, and so they got pulled aside very quickly. So we're seeing a little bit of stuff. And what's interesting is we have these agitators that are coming in from other towns. And boy, in the Midwest, it wouldn't go down as nice as it just did today. I mean, you wouldn't have a situation where someone literally drives from their crappy part of the world into your world, spewing against you, and they get to drive home at night. But I guess I'm glad that that isn't what we're doing now. But part of me is like, okay, desperate measures for desperate times. I want you to think about how you've processed the ultimate death in your life. Other people, even celebrities that you can't believe they're gone already. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. You know, when we lose our relatives, then the suffering is very proprietary. And the only way that we get true sympathy that we can respect is if we are talking to someone who has suffered the same loss in their realm. So let's say you lose your mom and someone else has lost their mom, generally the same age, maybe both situations, they should have lived another 10, 20 years easy. Something happened. And so it's much more challenging to get that feeling like anyone understands you that's around you. You know, there's millions of people understand you, but you don't know them physically. So you can't talk to them. When a celebrity passes away, aka flying quotes, whatever, then we have a situation where the loss is more understood by the masses. You know, I wasn't alive. Actually, sorry, I was. I was alive when all the 27s passed out of the hippie era. But when, I guess, give an example. When Stevie Ray Vaughan died in his helicopter accident in the late 80s, I was super duper into him. I was learning the guitar to his music. Not that I got close to his playing style at all. But I was just literally, I just bought a guitar. I'm at home doing, like, you know, sometimes like 3 or 4 hour sessions, just riffing over his stuff, trying to learn it. And I'm at work. And the first report that came in was that Eric Clapton had passed away. And not that I want anyone else to pass away in place of somebody else. I didn't know Eric that well in terms of the music. I know I didn't like his music much. No offense. Like, his stuff is extremely depressing. But he's an extremely talented guy. Take nothing away from him. And then it was like a part of me inside was going, whew, the old guy left. The new guy is still here, right? The revolution in blues guitar is still here. And a guy that's passé has died. And then an hour later, again, no internet at this point, it's the other way. The young one passed and the old one's still here. Now, again, I'm nothing against Eric Clapton, okay? But then it was like about a month ago, I found this dude on the internet. I forgot his name. It's a black guy that wears glasses. He has a beard. He does these reaction videos to music, and he is just a delight, man. I'll put his channel up there so you can see it. I love this guy. I love the way he reacts. He's exactly like the dudes that I grew up with. He sounds like Bill Bellamy, which is really funny. But he reacted to one of the most famous recordings of Stevie Ray Vaughan's playing Voodoo Child, which is obviously a Hendrix tune, in Texas on some stage just a couple months before he passed. And if you haven't seen this performance, it is, and you like guitar playing, it's just ungodly how amazing this about 10-minute video is of him playing this. If you've attempted to play the guitar, your jaw's on the ground. If you play guitar, your jaw's through the floor, because this guy's amazing. And I sat there finding myself reliving his death. And it was one of these things where I'm just zipping through this other dude's channel, right? And I'm watching him. The first one was he reacted to Black Betty, which is a great video. You got to watch him react to. But he gets to this one, and I'm sitting there, and I just started just weeping. I just couldn't stop the tears, man. I'm just like, oh my fucking God, this guy's gone. And of course, we lost Hendrix. We lost Janis Joplin, Morris, Jim Morrison. We lost all these people before they were 30. Tons of them. All amazing. All would have created another album of something amazing. But I was trying to, you know, after I got done with the session, and this dude was appreciating him the way I would, which is great. It always feels good when you have a kindred soul sort of thing. That's why I think I like this guy. He seems to like what I like. But I went back and I was trying to think about, because then I was at the lounge and I was like, dude, you guys got to watch this guy. He's great. And I started playing his videos and there, everyone's laughing. And so I put the Stevie one on. And we got a bunch of old guys in the room as well, who definitely know Stevie was the bomb. And we're all just watching this thing. I said, you know, I'm not going to play the whole thing, but just take a look. And nobody seemed bored, but everybody's just in awe. And I'm wondering, like, for me, I think it was just that I felt like this guy was just getting to his prime and he got lifted out of the world. That for me was the thing. And it used to be when I was younger, there was always that sort of saying that was something like, God works in mysterious ways. And you're like, okay, I guess he wants a good guitar player in heaven. You know, one of those kind of silly thought processes. I have to say the music in heaven's got to be great, right? But it was just interesting to go back and think about, like, why was I so emotional? And part of me was thinking, because of other experiences in my life, I was at work when I heard this information about him passing. So I had to swallow any emotions. Plus, I was probably in shock. Plus, I had distractions, which was work. And so I didn't have to process that information. Same thing happened to me when Prince passed away. I'm at an interview. I'm at a job interview, and I get my phone starts blowing up, and I'm like, I'm not looking at my phone. I'm at an interview. I'm at the break. Hasn't even really started yet. And then all of a sudden, I was like, okay, wait a minute. My phone has got like 20 text messages in it, all happening in the last 5 minutes. Like something like, would the world blow up? And I'm just not feeling shockwave yet. So I look in there. So I couldn't process it. I did do an episode that day, and I definitely got emotional. And then I re-recorded it. And, but I still had just couldn't process this dude dying. Huge part of my life. That's why my phone blew up, because people knew my connection with this dude. So I'm probably about 2 or 3 weeks, probably 1 or 2 weeks away from this, him dying. And I was just sitting in my office just going, oh my God, I just got to deal with this. And I'm looking at videos of him playing. And one came on where he's playing. It's a very recent one at the time, especially with his all chick band. And it says something about Frankenstein. I've told this once before, but him playing Frankenstein, which is Edgar Winter's song, which my father raised me on. If you haven't heard Frankenstein, oh my God, get to it. But that was the call sign between my father and I, Frankenstein. Nobody ever listens to Edgar Winter's Frankenstein except dudes in the 70s. And then I'm watching this thing and he does like, you know, a little bit of Let's Go Crazy. And then all of a sudden his bass player chick comes in and starts da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm just like, what? Now get this. Get this, man. I'm watching this video. I'm getting totally emotional, man. My eyes are just fountains, man. So I'm watching this, and what am I thinking of? I'm watching Prince, and I'm thinking of my old man. And I'm thinking, this is almost like Prince coming back to one, dropping a little, you're going to want to see this after I'm gone. This is my message to you personally, dude. Watch me play one of your favorite songs that has never even been rumored to be played by this dude. So I'm watching this, and my phone goes, bzzz. I look down, and it's my father texting me saying, I can't believe he's gone, or I still can't believe he's gone. Right while I'm watching Frankenstein coming out of Prince with his whole band, and my old man, the only other person in the world I'm thinking of, texts me. Talk about connections, right? That ethereal wind, man, just was like, hey, Dad, something's going on here, right? And so I immediately text him the performance. And it was like this little Chotsky between my dad and I and Prince. It was just crazy. But there's a cartoon moment going on there, sort of. Me thinking things are happening that may not be happening. Maybe he did truly just put that back there and go, okay, God, can I go down one more time and edit my past to stick this performance in there? Because there's one kid. Yeah, that's just fiction, most likely. Maybe not, though. And that'd be super cool if it weren't. If you have similar experiences like this and you're willing to share them in the comments, please do. Because this is like one of those areas where we all think about it, we all deal with it, but almost nobody talks about it. It's like, again, what I said in my suicide episode. Who walks in the room and says, how you doing, man? And the other guy goes, I'm thinking about killing myself. Oh, really? Well, let's have a conversation about that. That never happens, does it? But it should. It should. If you have that feeling, you shouldn't be, it almost should be, you're raised with that sensibility when you're young. Okay, if you ever feel like hurting yourself, don't crawl into a box and don't be embarrassed. That is when you come to mommy or daddy or mom and dad or your buddies or somebody and you tell somebody. Don't feel weird. Just let them know you had a little spurt of a weird emotion. And then we'll talk you through it and you'll probably feel a heck of a lot better. Maybe you just need to get around us a little bit more. Maybe you're too much in your apartment and worried about some CG model coming to kill you. Anyway, I think you feel me. I'm going to pepper these episodes into the other more sort of exciting episode topics. I am getting into a bunch of topics that are requiring a lot of research, but it's good research. It's exciting research, exciting subject matter. So I hope you guys, I think you'll really dig it. And we're going to reprise a few episodes from the past where the research was not really there. So that we can basically say, this one's good, that one's crap. Maybe we can even retire the old ones. But we'll have a much better replacement. So if you have subjects, by the way, you want me to cover, I keep forgetting to say this, please put them in the comments below. Go to Facebook and tell me, or whatever. I don't want to push any more, you know, social media. But and you can always contact me at YouTube at deepthoughtsradio.com. It doesn't go to YouTube. It comes straight to me. But that's a good segue to go to deepthoughtsradio.com in general. We have two video, two audio, social media, all new remastered season one. I also have reduced the size of some of the MP3s because depending on where I am and what computer I'm using, I don't have my best software. So I take some of the episodes from 100 and something meg down to like 60. So less than half to download now. Like episode 520 was gigantic. It was like 120 meg, and I got down to like 60 meg without injuring the quality at all. I did put up a new t-shirt for the season 6 That will not be remotely the end of season 6. I also took down the season 5 stuff, so you can't get those anymore. And I'm going to be putting up some hopefully more funny creations up there so we can have some fun. But anyway, until next time, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. You see people abuse brother. We see that, don't we?